This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
For some more thoughts on what's moving markets, we have on the line Tony Nash, the CEO of Complete Intelligence. Welcome to the show, Tony. Let's start with the UK. With Brexit complete now, Boris Johnson is now looking at a December 31st deadline to finalise Britain's transition from the EU's trade regime. In a note, you forecasted that any loss in trade to be modest at best. Why do you say that, considering that the EU makes up a majority of Britain's trade partners?
Well, it does, but the most favored nation tariff rate for non-EU members is something like 2.3%. So adding 2% on the price of anything is not going to make a major difference in as to whether somebody buys or sells a good in continental Europe. So the bigger issue and the trickier issue is the non-tariff barriers that Europe has. These are the regulatory requirements around things like fishing or whatever. So the UK is going to have to navigate around those non-tariff barriers. It's not exactly the tariff barrier that is the issue. So now, in terms of country partners, the US is actually the largest trade partner of the UK. It's around $67-68 billion a year. So the second largest export partner is Germany at about $45 billion. So the EU, as an aggregate partner, is of course larger than the US, but the EU as a trade partner is stagnant. It's not growing from the UK. It hasn't grown since hasn't grown noticeably since about 2015-16, whereas with the US, it's still growing at $1 billion+ a year. So that's a very vibrant relationship, where the EU relationship is pretty stagnant with the UK.
And staying on the UK, Tony, where do you see the pound heading this year?
Well, we see the pound continuing to strengthen until about April. And once April hits, we see some of the strength that we've seen coming on to really tail off just a bit, maybe one between, say, 0.5% and 1% a month through maybe mid-year. So it's, the pound is really discovering its level now. And we're hoping that the volatility really comes down, which we think it will. It'll settle around that 130 mark. But who knows? I mean, we could later in the year see some political event happen that would create more volatility, but it's certainly not what we expect.
Yeah, having seen Amazon, Microsoft, and indeed the Nasdaq all hitting all-time highs, also having beaten expectations, Tony, are there any uncomfortable comparisons with the dot-com crash of the late 90s and early 2000s, in your opinion?
Aside from Tesla coming off by like 20% today.
That too.
We have extraordinary equities, individual equities like Tesla. But in general, if you look at, say, 2019 or 2018, actually, we didn't really see equity market gains on net in 2018, if you compare Jan 18 to December 18. 2019, of course, we saw a fantastic year in 2019. But this year so far, all the gains that we've seen since October of 2019 are fully on the back of Fed repo operations. So once the Fed slows down repos, we'll see the equity markets kind of stagnate, and we may even see them decline. So it really all depends, and you guys were talking about interest rates in Southeast Asia, it really all depends on the central bank operations and the technique they're taking. And once that slows down, you'll see equity markets come off a bit.
And Tony, meanwhile, the coronavirus has, of course, impacted the global supply chain with whole provinces and cities closed in China. So how is this going to impact the global technology companies, even the likes of Apple?
Well, with guys like Flextronics and other Apple suppliers staying closed until, March or April now, you're going to see some really tight supply chains, and that'll impact the revenues of some publicly traded companies. If it's only through the end of February, let's say the coronavirus kind of tails off and this vaccine that was supposedly developed yesterday is efficacious, and we can, say, shake it off by the end of Feb, then I think things are going to be okay. If it really takes 2 or 3 more months, then we're going to see some very tight supply chains. I think in the short term, it means producer price inflation. I think in the longer term, companies, of course, are looking at the risk associated with having major portions of their supply chain based in China. And you'll see major companies reevaluating what that means. And as we've talked about before, our view is we're going to see more regionalization of supply chains. So those companies who are manufacturing in China for export will look to other places, Southeast Asia, Mexico, Eastern Europe, so on and so forth. Those companies that are manufacturing in China for China will, of course, stay in China. But it's the for export part where there's a real question mark.
And then, Tony, let's take a look at earnings. What tech results will you be keeping an eye out, or has anything already caught your attention this week?
So far this week, things are kind of as expected, aside from Tesla's, Super Bowl bounce over the past couple of days. I think our eyes have been on coronavirus. If things are getting better, I think we'll see a big sigh of relief in markets. But, markets always overshoot and then they find the right spot. And so it's more, I think people are looking more at the risks than the benefits, and they're just kind of capping that off, and we'll start getting into an excited place. Well, today was really a good day, and we'll start to see a more excited place over the next couple of days if there's relief over coronavirus.
All right, and on that note, thank you so much for joining us on the line, Tony. That was Tony Nash, CEO at Complete Intelligence. And now moving on to the other big international news today. Just a few hours ago, U.S. President Donald Trump was acquitted in his impeachment trial. The Senate decided not to remove Trump from office on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress arising from his dealings with the Ukraine.
Yeah, the Senate voted to acquit him on charges of abuse of power by 52-48 and by 53-47 on obstruction of Congress. The Democratic-led House of Representatives approved the charges on December 18. Now, Mitt Romney of Utah was the only Republican senator to vote to convict Trump on the first charge of abuse of power. He's also the first senator to convict a president from his own party. Prior to the vote, Romney told the Senate that the president was guilty of an appalling abuse of trust.
Yeah, so by and large, his own Republican Party stood behind them. The only exception to that rule was this guy, Mitt Romney,
I think? Mitt Romney.
Yeah, he was the one who dissented. And I think the other one, which is also bear mentioning, was Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker. In response to his impeachment victory in a State of the Union address, he talked about his accomplishments. In response, Nancy Pelosi just took his speech and just ripped it in half. Very visual and very powerful.
But that's because when she reached out to shake his hand, he apparently turned away.
Yeah.
So it was like one slight after another.
That's right.
Yeah, but I find the Mitt Romney vote quite interesting because generally for things like this, you stick to party lines, right? Unless you're trying to make a statement. So with this just happening a few hours ago, will Mitt Romney's vote make a statement? Let's not forget that he ran for president, was it two elections ago, against Barack Obama. Does he really hold any sway and influence over the public? We'll have to see. But I don't think there was any expectation that the Senate would impeach him.
Well, with this now behind them, the only next analysis of his performance will be the November elections. And I mean, the Gallup poll suggests that 49% of Americans are behind him, which is really, really high. Right? And he's also riding on the coattails of a strong economy. And as you said in the past before, with, via Taiwan's election, very few presidents or prime ministers, are shown the exit door when the economy is doing well.
Yeah, everything boils down to bread and butter issues, right? And you're an incumbent. You're the president in the White House. That already is a huge advantage.
Yeah, the force is quite strong with Donald Trump in this run-up.
Him and his hairstyle.
He's got the incumbent advantage. It doesn't help that the Democratic caucus was not didn't run well. There was a technical glitch.
Apocalypse.
Yes. That was a shambles, man.
Yeah.
The whole thing just collapsed.
So it's quite clear. Or not at least, I mean, anything can happen. But he's got quite a strong lead right now. Just taking a look at a few earnings before we move on. Spotify had its earnings announcement a few hours ago, and it's expanding its podcast catalog and media footprint with the acquisition of a sports and entertainment news company called The Ringer. Spotify did not disclose the terms of the deal and said it was expected to close the deal in the first quarter of 2020. This follows Spotify's other acquisitions. They're trying to expand the catalog of media, similar to what Netflix does with its own catalog.
But the important thing thing is that they came up with bad numbers. So their fourth quarter loss per share was 1.14 euros, compared with a loss of 0.22 euros expected by analysts. So not so good for them, you know.
Yeah, they lost more money than it was expected. Actually, not many people know that Spotify is not American.
Yeah,
they're
it's
Swedish.
Not.
Right?
They were very innovative in their day, actually.
They were, yeah.
Yes, and I really will have to see whether they can turn a profit at any time, but it is a competitive field because streaming is very competitive in general. And we're going to be heading to a few messages right now. And up next, we're going to be taking a look at the new guidelines from the Securities Commission to enhance shareholder activism with comments from Devinesson Evanson of the Minority Shareholders Watch Group. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.